Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Illinois' 12th District congressional race is considered one of the most competitive in the country and pits incumbent Democrat Bill Inyard of Belleville against 10-term State Representative Mike Bost of Murfreesboro. The district stretches from Alton to Cairo and includes Scott Air Force Base, East St. Louis, and lots of farm country. We have both candidates with us in studio today appearing separately. We picked names out of a hat, and that determined that Mike Bost would appear first. Mike Bost, nice to have you with us.
It's nice to be with you, Don. Thank you for so much for having me on.
Our time is somewhat limited today, so I'd like to begin with the ad.
Okay.
You know of which I'm speaking. It's the attack ad, which shows you in the legislative floor tossing papers and shouting.
Right.
A lot of people have suggested that ad has backfired on your rival.
Yeah, and I think the polls have shown that. But let me first off explain about the ad and the issue that occurred. My wife thinks it's amazing that they're trying to paint that I'm like that all the time, but I've been in the Illinois General Assembly 20 years, and I only have two ties on during the entire time. And she said she's bought more ties than that. But that being said, that the day that the real rant occurred and the issue occurred, it was just about 2 weeks after Nancy Pelosi had said we need to pass a bill so we can find out what it will do. The thing is, we had went in the Illinois General Assembly, we'd been working very hard for about a year and a half on the pension bill. I came in that morning as one of the floor leaders, and I asked our staffer, hey, you know, Mike, I got to find out about the bill. And he goes, I said, there's some points in there that I need. He said, it got changed. I said, how much? What got changed? He said, all of it. I said, when? He said, in the middle of the night. I said, who changed it? He said, Speaker Madigan. I said, we got to be, this was 7:10, and I said, we've got to be in committee to vote this out at 8 o'clock. He said, yeah, I know. I said, so what's in it? He said, we don't know. We haven't got it yet. 10 minutes before committee, they brought a 198-page bill. It went out on a partisan roll call and then was brought to the floor. The problem is that's not the way government was supposed to be. And we have dealt with that in the state of Illinois for a long time, and the constituents of the state of Illinois understand that. And sometimes there are three things that I will stand up and argue for. If somebody does something to violate your rights under the Constitution, either the state of Illinois or the United States Constitution, then it's worth standing up to argue for. I didn't get violent. I got loud. And when the other issue is if somehow rules have been put in place so that your representative, either your representative from the district in which you live, or I, as your representative, do not have the right and an equal playing field to represent you the way that I've been elected to do. Those two issues were violated that day. And so, and the bright side is we were able to stop a bill that was very, very bad. We were able to stop it that day. The other issue is if you do anything to my children or wife, then that's probably out there.
Do you think things are going to be any different in Washington if you are elected? I mean,
no,
look at our Congress today.
You're right. You're right. And let me tell you this. I've spent the last 20 years working side by side in bipartisan manner. I believe that what's going on in Washington has failed. Now, I do believe that many bipartisan bills have been passed over the Senate, and I think the Senate needs to have a lot of correction. There are 360 bills actually on the desk of Harry Reid that have been passed in a bipartisan manner. Now, you may agree with them or disagree with them, but let them have their hearing. And that's what we've dealt with in the state of Illinois. So that does need to be changed, and I hope the voters are going to send a clear message that needs to be changed.
You know, I think a lot of people might wonder why anyone would want to go to Congress these days with an approval rating around 12-13%, whatever it is. It's remarkably low. Why the heck bother?
Well, it took a lot of prayer and a lot of decision making to make the decision with my family, and you know they've lived in Illinois politics for all these years, and all of my children are now adults. We've got 9 grandchildren, but I could have went ahead and stayed in Illinois and not ran for this job. But the reality is that I couldn't look the 9 grandchildren in the eyes and tell you, at least I tried. If we all have the attitude, well, we can't change it. And that's not the way it was set up. We have a golden opportunity in this country, and it's a great country. If we don't like the way things are going, we can elect different people to come up with different ideas, to work forward, to try to make it better. Sometimes it doesn't work, but hopefully it will.
I mentioned that the district, which is rambles on from all the way south. What do you think are the most pressing issues for your district?
Jobs. Jobs is probably the most important, and that job occurs by overburdensome regulation, not sensible regulation. There's sensible regulation. But in that district, we've had the coal fields, but the coal, if the EPA passes the rules that they're proposing right now, that thank heaven the courts stopped, if they pass those, you know, 42% of the energy in the state of Illinois comes from coal. And we're going to have brownouts. We're going to have blackouts. We will have loss of jobs. We have to make sure that the EPA regulations and other regulations are not so overburdensome. One thing that is also very important is the pipeline. The pipeline, if you understand, it has a Y off right across the river in Wood River, and which is in the district, and then ends just north of Mount Vernon. If the Keystone Pipeline is passed, it does tremendous things. It does provide us a quicker way to transport and a safer way to transport our fuel or our oil to the refineries. It also then frees up those vehicles that we're now using to transport that fuel and actually brings the cost for things like grain hauling down. That's one thing that we've discovered. So everything is tied to jobs. You know, the fracking bill that it was passed in the state of Illinois, I believe in that bill. It's one of the best bills in the nation. I worked on it myself, working with a bipartisan manner and across groups that were everything from environmentalists to the business side to come up with a sensible plan. They get that implemented and then not have interference from the federal government, we actually will see job growth, and that's vitally important.
You've got a significant poverty pocket in the district East St. Louis. What can be done about that?
Well, what I just said, by creating jobs itself, the spinoff jobs and the ability to allow those jobs. Now, let me tell you that the county and the local officials will have to set and work together with assistance that they might be able to receive from the state and encouragement from the feds. But I think the most important thing is to just put people back to work. If people are working, we can cure so many problems.
You know, Mike, I've interviewed a lot of politicians in my day, and every one of them says two things. We want to create jobs and we want better education. Something happens when they actually get elected that they keep talking about but not much happens.
That's because first off, let me tell you that I never said I will create jobs. Government doesn't create jobs. The entrepreneur, the aggressive business person that sees an opportunity to provide those jobs and grow jobs and with sensible, and it is government can either stand in the way or get out of the way. And I think that our government, you know, I think one of the best explanations I heard was from another congressman that explained it this way, that after the Second World War, there was a swimmer. He was explaining it to a swimmer, and he said that America was two lengths ahead, but they didn't feel like that was fair, so they put a 5-pound weight around them to slow them down so they'd be with the other countries. And then they in another forum, they put 10 more pounds and then 15 pounds, and now we got about a 50-pound weight on us, and we can't figure out how come we can't keep up with other countries. We need to remove the weight and allow ourselves to compete on a worldwide market.
One of the things that happened after World War II was that the unions thrived mm-hmm. and really created a middle class after mm-hmm. World War II. Middle class is shrinking now. It's going. Unions are down. Membership is down around 11 or 12%
sure.
as well.
Sure. And let me tell you this. I'm a union firefighter. I understand that. And there is negotiations that occur, and I would never do anything from government. I think that's your right to organize and to have pre-negotiations and make sure that if you enter into agreement, that is honored. But it is and must be the opportunity for these bigger, good-paying jobs, because the thing is, if we do not allow the company and or business to thrive and, as I've said before, overburdening regulation, there aren't any union jobs. There's no jobs. Mm-hmm. And I think that the unions combined with company can work together and really bring this back.
What are some of the overburdening regulations?
Okay, let me explain to you. Right now, under the EPA rules, there's a proposal that it's a carbon emissions and the level of carbon emissions. And the concern that even with trading, for instance, in the state of Illinois, to meet those emissions, even though we have all this Illinois coal, only one power plant can burn Illinois coal, and that is the New Prairie State Power Plant. I'm all for the technology that allows that to occur, but the emissions rules that are being proposed now by the EPA are to a level that there's no way that they can meet any of those regulations. However, The coal is then shipped overseas and burnt in China and India and put into the same atmosphere. Wouldn't it make more sense to burn it in the coal fire power plants we have here that have clean scrubbers on them? Now, that doesn't mean we stop aggressively going after solar and wind energy and other types of energy like that, but we're only at 6% right now. So we have to make a sensible plan to do that. But that's one regulation. Other regulations that are overburdensome as we worked as far as the oil communities are concerned, as far as arguing as far as clean burnoffs on same thing. It's a question of should we flare or shouldn't we flare? Well, then if you write the rule to flare, but it doesn't make sense because if you catch the gas is called a dirty gas, and it takes more energy to clean it up. And these are all legislation that needs to be looked at.
You mentioned carbon emissions a moment ago and have mentioned it. You believe in climate change? You believe the climate is changing as a result of this?
I don't know that I do, no. I think that we have to be wise and good stewards. I believe, if you notice, you changed it to the statement is climate change now. Mm. Before it was global warming. Now
whatever it is. Some
scientists do. Some scientists don't. But I think that we have to look at the long-term scale. I want to provide an opportunity to hand things off to our children. But if we're starving our children to death right now, we have to make wise decisions for today about the future.
You know, a lot of farmers in your district, mm-hmm. and it's very heavily dependent on farmers in agriculture in your district. It's a big part of the economy. A lot of those farmers believe in climate change, I'll call it that again. Yeah. And they're concerned because they feel that their crop yields are going to go down, mm-hmm. and that their revenue is going to go down, and they're going to look to government for some sort of help when this happens. Right. And they're convinced it's going to happen.
Well, I don't think they all are, though. I work with the farmers on a regular basis. Though I know that the Farm Bureau endorsed my opponent, that's because I don't have a... When we talked about that, it's because they go strictly on your federal record. My state record, I've always been endorsed by the Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau, working with them to come up with sensible plans, you know, whether it's the farm bill or whatever. But the concerns that the farmers I have that I deal with is to make sure that they can get the best price that they can for their grain, to make sure, as I was talking about the fact that right now they're having to pay so much money to have it transported because we're not allowing the Keystone Pipeline to do what it's supposed to do. But I've always been able to work with the farmers, but I think their climate change is you know, it's a long-term issue you may have to look at, but for the most part, we've got to look at more from year to year.
But if there is a reduction in crop yields, is there a role for government in helping the farmers?
There has to be some sort of role. That's why the Farm Bill came out in the first place. I'm not one for big government giveaways or everything like that, but we need to make sure. There are so many people that live in our inner cities and other places, for that matter, that are not involved in agriculture, that automatically believe that those products just naturally show up in your grocery store. And I know from my experience of working in the family business that I did, working side by side with farmers, everything from hauling fertilizer, lime, and grain from the fields, that there's a lot that goes into it. And what we've done with some sensible and good studies and development of our seed crops and the production levels. But we've got to continue to make sure that the breadbasket continues to exist. Mm.
A couple of the hot-button issues that always come up in the campaigns, a quick response to these, if you will. Gay marriage, your position?
I have never supported gay marriage. Mm-hmm.
Abortion?
I'm pro-life.
Abortion rights?
I'm pro-life.
Right. Let's go to the phones and bring in Jerry, who's calling from O'Fallon, who wants to get in on the climate change discussion, I believe. Jerry, go ahead.
Well, good morning. I was kind of listening very carefully, and I was very impressed until you started talking about, some scientists believe and some scientists don't believe in climate change. And I think it's more accurate to reflect it's about 95% of climatologists believe that climate change is real and it is a function or a byproduct of human activity. And to be honest, up until then, I kind of thought you sounded like someone with original ideas, but that's one of the major talking points that gets stressed over and over again. And I'm sorry, I believe it affects your credibility.
Well, you know, I have worked side by side with those that, you know, Southern Illinois University is right there in my district. I work with many of the scientists that, and have talked with them. The thing is, based on their theory, do we modify to the point that we lose jobs? If that's the case, I don't think that's a wise way to be a good steward of what we have. Now, that doesn't mean we automatically poo-poo everything and throw it away. I think you should be wise. I think you should look at if the long-term goals and check to see if what is being predicted by scientists are slowly coming to fruition, or if there's something showing different than that. But to say that we're all of a sudden going to stop people from having the opportunity to provide for their family today from something that the scientists say may affect us in 200 years or 300 years, we need to go ahead and be wise in studying that, but we should not put people out of work based on that today.
I believe that's another straw man argument, that it's not taking away jobs now. In fact, investing in the energy of the future is a better way to
provide a
sustainable economy.
I have no problem with that. I think that, as I said earlier, I am really in support of wind energy and solar energy. But right now, we're at a 6% level. We cannot walk away in the state of Illinois from the fact that we have 42% that's provided by coal, and we can't instantly throw the switch and walk in a different direction. We can wisely allow investment into those other areas, but we must make sure that we still provide, because the thing is, if the implementation of those rules that were set forth by the EPA right now, which doesn't go through the Congress, by the way, which is a unique thing about our situation in the state of Illinois, but in the federal government on how we implement rules, but those do not go through the Congress, just by the EPA. If we allow those to be implemented, the amount of brownouts, blackouts, and the fear of what the price of that electricity will be when someone is on a set income and all of a sudden their bill goes from $50 to $500.
We talked about agriculture a little bit. Yeah. Let's talk about Scott Air Force Base and its future. There are some who think it may not have a future.
Well, I'm going to tell you that any legislator that represents this area must know that it must have a future. Let me tell you that as a Marine, I was part of the Marine Air Wing, but every branch of the service uses Scott Air Force Base as a control center for the moving of not only troops, but products and everything that is in the...
disaster relief, everything.
Everything. So it is the hub, and it is so centrally located, it must be done to make sure not only that it is supported where it is now, but it must be expanded, and I believe that's the case.
How much of a threat do you think exists for Scott? It's such a huge complex.
The thing is, any base... As a congressman, you should be able to work with your colleagues to make sure that you are able to understand that anyone is danger at any time. My job would be to make sure that that danger doesn't come to fruition.
All right. Well, that is certainly another important aspect.
Yes, it is.
How many jobs are involved at Scott? Do you know offhand?
I had that originally, and I'm drawing a blank.
The House would not be dealing, per se, with situations such as exist now in the Middle East with ISIS, for instance, and with what's going on in Iraq and Syria. But you are a veteran. What are your thoughts with regard to
all of that? Well, let me explain to you that I think that troops should have been left at a sensible level anyway. You know, we're dealing with nations that have never had an elected form of government in the early stages of going through that. We should have protected our interests there. It's a shame that that it has turned the way it has. The question is, do you put boots on the ground or everything like that? As your congressman, I would study that very closely. Let me tell you, I have a unique side in this. Not only am I a veteran and a Marine, so I have that military side where I would look at that, but I also have a son who is a Marine. Mm-hmm. And the roughest day of my life was the day that I watched him go to Iraq. So as a legislator, it will be something very, very important. Each time things would come before me, that I would make that decision. I support a strong military. I support a force in readiness. But I need to make sure that if I'm going to sign off and say that I'm going to vote, if it's in a situation like that, that I understand that those are someone's sons and daughters.
Should we put boots on the ground to go after these ISIS forces?
I almost believe that we're going to have no choice but to put boots on the ground in some way, because the airstrikes are not showing that we're gaining the ground necessary. You know, you'd love to say the other units, the other countries would be able to do that for us. I'd love to see them do that, but the reality is it is in the president's hand to make that call.
Are we doing enough for our veterans?
No. No. I think our VA system and everything and the failures that have occurred is an administrative problem that needs to be aggressively gone after. There's some commitments that have been made to our veterans, whether it's at Marion or here in St. Louis. We need to make sure that those services are provided. And I think all members of Congress should argue for that with the sacrifices that these ladies and gentlemen have made.
Has somebody dropped the ball?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, and I think that we've seen that a lot in a lot of the administration issues, not only with the VA, IRS, EPA, the list goes on and on. I mean, we've even got a situation where one of the most important things, let me tell you that it's no surprise to anybody that I was not a supporter of Barack Obama's president, but he's my president. And when your own agency has failed in trying to protect him, and those things show up, that bothers me tremendously. And I think there's an overall problem with the administration right now and their ability to run these agencies to a point to where they're operating efficiently.
We only have a minute left. What leads you to believe that the Congress could become more effective if you were part of it?
Well, very simple. I've been able to work in the state of Illinois in a bipartisan manner for issue after issue. I'm very familiar and with working and making sure that I'm taking the opinions of the people I represent to Springfield. I can do that same thing in Washington. Many of those members that are in Washington, I've actually, from Illinois delegation, I've served with already. I know how to work with them.
All right. Any final point you'd like to make in 15 seconds?
Just thank you for having me on today and look forward to, you know, the next 19 days and hopefully I'm going to ask for people's votes, and they're going to get out and vote.
I'm sure you'll be happy when the 19 days are over.
I will do that.
Mike Boston, I want to thank you so much for being with us and coming to our studio. Good luck on November 4th.
Thank you.
As you run for Illinois' 12th Congressional District. We'll be back with incumbent Congressman Bill Enyart in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Good evening. I'm Robert Peterson, and you're listening to St. Louis Public Radio, St. Louis on the Air this evening. And this is the first day of our fall membership campaign. Today's program, we have two candidates that are going to be talking about their run for an elected office. This is a conversation between the host, the candidates, and you. And it's important. One of the reasons that we're asking for your support is that you make it possible for us to continue these dialogues, this type of conversation. Your role in our democracy is important, and your role in making sure that we have the financial resources to keep the station strong is quite important this evening. Please do your part right now at stlpublicradio.org or call 314-516-4000.
And do join us today with your tax-deductible contribution of $5 or $10 a month as a sustaining member. Base your decision on the programs you listened to in the past month. Every dollar you contribute will be wisely spent, we promise. We carve our budgets in stone and squeeze every decibel possible out of each dollar you give. So be assured that our sincere folks thank you for whatever you're able to give, and make a generous contribution to St. Louis Public Radio at stlpublicradio.org or give me a call. Give us a call, 314-516-4000.
The news and information you hear on St. Louis Public Radio and the stories that you read on our website every day keeps you abreast of current affairs and helps you make decisions and choices that influence and enrich your life and your community. You make connections every day with your friends, family, and coworkers that you can link back to the St. Louis Public Radio stories and conversations you've either heard on air or read online. And when you can't listen to the radio or visit the website, we've got you covered each Friday. We highlight some of the top stories of the week online at stlpublicradio.org.
More than 21,000 people throughout the St. Louis region value our online and on-air services enough to make contributions. It's your turn to step forward and be counted among those who support the news that matters. That's what we do here. And programs like St. Louis on the Air, your first-time gift of support today, $5 a month or more at stlpublicradio.org, will make a difference, and it'll help cover the expenses to bring you the news coverage you rely upon. Please make a contribution of any amount online, stlpublicradio.org, or give us a call, 314-516-4000.
For me, politically speaking, it gives me that extra edge for local matters. Getting the background information on the who's, what's, and why's are incredibly helpful. I've been impressed with Chris McDaniel, and I was impressed with somebody who seems like a fairly young reporter, his depth of knowledge and his kind of ability to dig in and get a story. So that kind of local insight, local analysis helps me to learn the background information for why stories are happening, not just the what is happening. My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I live in downtown St. Louis, and I'm a member of St. Louis Public Radio.
And you can join him in support of St. Louis Public Radio by making your pledge online at stlpublicradio.org or calling 314-516-4000. Our goal is to have 10 people, you and 9 others, make a contribution, whether you're new or renewing, during this particular hour of St. Louis on the Air. Content from our locally produced shows, in addition to being on the air every day, also represents an important source of archival material for the people of St. Louis. Our online project, St. Louis History in Black and White, is a series of audio documentaries curated from hours of on-air conversations about race relations in our region. The collection includes stories of pain, but also stories of progress. It's just one more way that we try to advance a civil dialogue about issues that are important to you and this community. Your contribution will help make innovative projects like this possible. Please go to stlpublicradio.org or call 314-516-4000.
It's pretty simple. You turn to St. Louis Public Radio for St. Louis on the Air and our award-winning regional news coverage. Your donation helps St. Louis Public Radio bring these things to you. The best way you can give is a monthly sustainer. You'll provide steady, reliable support that enables St. Louis Public Radio to put more resources into the news, not into fundraising. And give online, stlpublicradio.org, or call 314-516-4000.